is recused in this matter. You may, Mr. Hansen. Let's give everybody a second to get in and out of the courtroom. And good morning to you, Mr. Hansen. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Brandon Hansen here on behalf of the plaintiff in this matter, Patricia Aiken. Basically today, we're just asking you to reverse Judge Patricia Wheelock's summary judgment order on May 12th. Basically, this case boils down to is how do we resolve a employment issue where you have Patricia Knapp, who got hired on the University of Nebraska Civil Clinic in 99 in a part-time capacity and sporadically for about the next 12 years before she was hired full-time in 2008. Well, at the end of, after meeting with Kevin Rooster on August 10th, 2012, after noticing a big pay disparity between herself and other civil clinic and other clinical professors, a broader issue, which we would argue is an issue of public concern, expressed it to Kevin Rooster, who acted as her supervisor, and then asked for the help address the gender equality issues that had been going on and been at least alleged by Ms. Knapp and present in the civil clinic. Just in terms of compensation for female practitioners. And basically,
is the thrust of your argument based upon the titles that the university gives to certain people in order to give them different pay for the same work?
I would say on a plaintiff's death claim, yes. And I would also argue that it would be probably the intention of appellees that titles matter. The reason that they got paid a lesser amount because she was not tenure track. Tenure track requires her duties. But by being hired on as a temporary lecturer, even though at full-time, the lowest paid one there, she was not even eligible to become tenure track in order to get higher.
What does that mean, not eligible?
According to the university bylaws, which are attached, I believe, to the either the affidavit or deposition of Susan Poser, who was the dean at the time. Basically, no one below the rank of an assistant professor is eligible to even go apply for a tenure-based track position.
How does that discriminate against a certain class of people if everyone's treated the same?
Well, the reason is because Patricia Knapp, the only female that was working in the civil clinical program at the time, was a temporary lecturer at the time. Lowest paid, the only one.
Were there other temporary lecturers?
No, not at that time.
So there's only one. So it's a universe of one.
Universe of one. It's kind of, basically what kind of happened here is almost like, I would call it a Kafka-esque scenario. Basically, Ms. Knapp got hired on the university in a temporary position, filled in part-time for years until she got hired in full-time. But by being hired in part-time and made full-time in a temporary lecturer, she was never able to make that second step to get higher compensation.
She was never able to, and does the record show that she made any attempt to become a tenured individual?
No, she would not even been eligible.
That's not the question.
No, she didn't.
She did not, okay. And so does your titles matter? Where does that go to? Which cause of action?
That would go to the cause of action number 5, which is what we'd argue is the Nebraska Fair Employment Practices Act.
So is that a classification argument?
It is.
What's the basis of a classification argument, and have we addressed it?
I couldn't find anything that was direct on the point. That could have been issued. I was just going through it and trying to review this situation.
Well, is a classification another theory of recovery?
I would argue so, yeah. It's actually a...
Under what statute?
48-1104, subsection 2, which states that no person can be limited or discriminated or classified in a way that would deprive them of employment opportunity.
So it's not some new theory?
No, it's just...
It's just one of the myriad adverse type things that can be alleged. Is that correct?
I would agree.
Did she ever ask to be classified differently than what she was classified?
To my knowledge, no.
Wouldn't that be incumbent upon the party to apply to the university for a different classification before you could allege that you were being not treated fairly as with regard to other people? And
I guess I'd argue that it'd be an act of futility. She was, by their own rules, not even eligible.
You keep saying eligible, counsel, but you've also admitted that that your client never sought anything. Isn't there a difference between being eligible and seeking it out?
Yes, we would argue that would go under like a failure to hire framework, like if you're trying to govern that. We're just saying that she was classified in a way on claim five, that there would be no way to actually apply to ask to get.
Well, are there other academic requirements that you have to have before you can be reclassified?
That I don't know on an application. All I know is that there are different duties that apply, and, you know, once you get down
but
the
But you're talking about a universe of one here. Were there any other male applicants that applied for the same job or same position and were treated differently?
Well, I would argue, well, actually, if you refer the deposition, Kevin Bruce, who was now the director of clinical programs. When he started off, he was hired on in a non-tenured position. And as time went on, they made his position. And then he became the director of clinical programs.
Say that again. They made what position? You're saying they converted an existing position to tenure, or did he apply for a tenure position, which is a different factual basis?
Well, it is. And actually, in Mr. Rooster's deposition, actually, Kenna Murphy is. And this is not about the tenure position, but when you talked about him as assuming the director role, Peter Hoffman left in about 1999-2000. And there wasn't an official act that named him, even by Mr. Brewster's own deposition testimony. He just kind of assumed that job. So as to whether he applied or not, and this would have been probably in the late 90s when that would have occurred, I don't have any knowledge of that. But I would say that Stephen J. Schmidt, who worked in the criminal clinic, they were admitted in, I believe, Exhibit 9, that he started off in a non-tenure position in 2006. His position was made a tenure track in 2007, and then he eventually got tenure. And through the entire period of 2006 to 2013, they also admit that Stephen Schmidt was paid more than his name. And they argue that's because he was running the criminal clinic, but he was also not, he taught classes, but he also still worked, I believe, in Lancaster. So that's why I said when we come down to this case, I won't pretend to be an expert on all of the bylaws of the university because I don't want to know. But we're playing a game of titles. That's why we're saying that because of the way that she was titled, the way she was segregated from.
You're saying they gave her this title and then that prevented her from applying for a tenured position. Is that your position?
It would be my position that would be an expert. Because she wouldn't even been able to get that.
But what's the discrimination?
Discrimination is that, well, we're here in a summary judgment motion. We're arguing that she was the only female working there, lowest paid, in a position that was unable to be maintained. So we're saying that we met the, under the McDonald frame shifting framework, we met and showed a potential discrimination. That then it was up to the university to provide a pretext. We're just saying that the evidence presented at the hearing wasn't enough to meet that burden. To determine whether discrimination was based upon her gender, which was what we would argue.
So the pretext of the university says, well, she never applied. So the burden shifted back to you to say, well, she did. She didn't. Why bother?
And as an argued pretext, it would have been futility. She couldn't have.
Okay.
Isn't that difficult for court to determine that defense, if you will, that it was futile? Isn't that difficult for us to discern?
Yes, I actually would argue, or I'd agree with you, sir. That's why, from the appellant side, you need a prior fact to discern. Because I'm saying that would be the defense of the evidence. Whether by the situation scenario the way it was, whether the facts apply and whether they're futile or not, whether she was classified as would require weighing of the facts. No questions, can I reserve a minute?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Wiltsy, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. At police the court, I'm John Wiltsy. I'm here on behalf of Board of Regents and Kevin Rooster. This case started with 9 discrimination claims. 6 of them were federal. The case was removed to federal court. 10th claim, a state state law claim. It has nothing to do with employment discrimination. Nine of the claims are subject to the preclusion doctrine, two branches. The six federal discrimination claims that Judge Camp ruled on are subject to the doctrine of claim preclusion. Were adjudicated in a final judgment that the appellants have not appealed.
Did you make the preclusion argument to the district court?
Yes, Your Honor, we did.
In what form?
In the form that I'm not sure that we came forward with the label claim preclusion. We said that those federal
You said this in argument? Was it in the answer?
It was in the answer. It was also in the meeting that we initially had with Judge Wheelock.
Isn't it? But this is sub disposo of summary judgment. There's no pretrial order that narrowed the issues, right?
That's correct.
Okay. No, so you all chatted about this.
We had a hearing.
Is it in a brief?
Summary judgment, when there was an agreement that the only issues that were before the court for Judge Wheelock's resolution were the state law. Namely, the three remaining employment discrimination claims and the so-called public policy.
So those are the four about which the summary judgment order is directed.
The state summary judgment.
The state summary judgment, right. So is your argument that the trial court shouldn't have discussed those four because they'd already been decided?
No, that is not my argument.
So what's precluded? Which of those are precluded and what's the basis of it?
All three of them are precluded.
Okay.
So I issue preclusion because they involve the same parties, same facts, and the same claims. The reason that the claims are the same is that state law claims are analogs to federal statutes, and they involve the same underlying facts.
So to the extent some of these are based on Title VII, we've said we look to federal cases.
Yes.
Does that help your argument that they're analogs?
Yes.
What about cause of action number four, which is, roughly speaking, equal pay? Have we said that also, that we look to federal cases on
yes,
equal pay?
Yes, I believe that.
And what's your authority for that?
I'm sorry, I don't recall the case that I cited for that proposition. I believe that there is a case that's on point that says that state law follows the federal EPA, or if not on the general principle that when there is a federal analog statute, the court looks to the federal analog, decide the state law claim when the same issues are involved, on the same facts between the same parties.
Did the judge rule on issue preclusion?
The judge went beyond that and gave those claims his independent analysis, advised yet another reason.
So I guess what I'm saying is there a ruling on issue preclusion to which you wish to direct us?
No.
Thank you.
With respect to the unique claim, Judge Wheelock analyzed it using the framework that was set up and most recently reaffirmed in Oldfield versus Nebraska Machinery Company, which we didn't cite in the brief. That's 296 Nebraska 469, namely that there's no clear mandate of a public policy that has been violated in respect to the, I believe this is, now I'm talking about the ninth claim, the so-called public policy claim. based on the code of, or the rules of professional responsibility. The rules of professional responsibility state that they are not designed to be a basis for civil liability, so therefore there can not be a clear mandate that could be violated with respect to the denied claim. Judge Wheelock correctly found that the plaintiff failed to state a claim for relief with respect to that claim. And since he had also found that there was no hostile environment, no constructive discharge, no retaliation, that was taken into account in assessing the validity of the claim. For all of those reasons, the court should affirm the District Court of Lancaster County. There are no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? A minute and 4 seconds, Mr. Hansen.
Yes, Your Honor. Just briefly, as the court stated, there was no ruling by an issue preclusion here in this case. It also be argued that preclusion would apply because this is not, it requires a subsequent or a prior action to have occurred. This is just a continuation of the same one.
So where does that leave us if there's no ruling on the issue preclusion?
It's probably not issue preclusion.
Is there a cross appeal saying judge failed to rule on issue preclusion?
There is no. And we'd also
so the federal court remanded these claims for determination in the state court.
Yes.
Didn't make any determination as to those claims in the federal court.
Yeah. They
are these claims analogous to any of the other claims in the federal court that were ruled upon?
Answer
here. Are claims 4, 5, 7, and 9 related to the other claims that were decided by the federal court?
We'd say that they're based on the same facts, but we'd argue that the application of state law could have decided differently.
Okay.
And we'd also state that different evidence.
In other words, these claims aren't bound by what was decided in the federal court?
No.
Okay.
And the you're saying the evidence was different in the state court?
Yes, there were two additional
evidence. In opposing counsel, I think he says, well, that was unimportant evidence. What's your response?
My response would be that one of the conditions here is they like to argue that the reason she was paid less, she had different duties, and one of those was the concept of research. And the deposition of Andrew Inglis and the deposition of Catherine Gatewood both confirmed that yes, Ms. Knapp did pay them the legal research report. And I also state that Exhibit 9, the request for admissions, also states that Ms. Knapp was also part of the Weebling Research Project that was occurring at the University of
So the body of evidence was different, is that?
Not overall body, but the certain components of like the comparator issue. That's why there was additional evidence for the trial court to go through.
Thank you.
And that's why we're respectfully requesting the court to summary judgment allow this case to
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments for today. The court is adjourned and you are excused.